Welcome to the official Star Wars The Old Republic podcast. I'm Brooks Guthrie.
And I'm Eric Musco. And on today's episode, we sit down with Damian Schubert and Daniel Erickson to talk about Game Update 1.2 and some of the exciting things coming in Game Update 1.3. And we also talk to David Bass about PAX East and all the exciting conventions we're going to be going to later this year. All right, and we are joined today by two awesome gentlemen right here at BioWare Austin. I'm just going to let you guys introduce yourself and what your title is, and if you could tell us a little bit about what you do here at the studio.
I'm Damian Schubert. I'm a Dark Warlord of Systems Design.
This is Daniel Erickson coming at you as lead designer and dedicated to doing radio voice for the whole interview.
Excellent. I'm going to be really impressed if you pull that off.
I will be too.
Because I have no radio voice. We often talk about this. I just speak normally. And then Brooks goes into his radio voice, and it's really impressive. And I'm just like, I can talk into a microphone.
I was actually told numerous times when I was doing theater in university that I had a great voice for cartoons or radio. And I believe the implication was a face for radio as well.
And that remains today.
Yep. As you know, 1.2 came out a little bit ago. Why don't you guys talk about some of the big changes that came in 1.2, what some of your philosophies were going into making some of those big changes?
Well, the cool thing about how we did this particular patch, 1.2, is that we really experimented more with letting the teams own the features a lot more and not be as top-down and let, for example, the GUI customization team take that ball and run with it. And I think there you see an excellent example of how that philosophy came to life. They did way more than we expected. They thought of lots of things that weren't in the original design document. I think the quality of that feature really speaks for itself. And, you know, that's a philosophy we really want to sort of spread out through all of the teams in the future so that all of the features are just taken to the hilt and are as good as they possibly can be.
One of the things about 1.2, sorry, no, I probably can't hold that up for 15 minutes. The legacy was obviously the big piece for 1.2 that we were excited about, and legacy had been in the works forever. I went back and looked at original design docs, you know, when we had 8 pages with the entire really high-level design pitch, and it's got my really, really bad little family tree. One of the things that was always really hard for us was that it involved so many of our systems coming together and working together and playing nicely that it took a lot more work than we thought in the very last minute to pull it all together. But it was beautiful to see it actually come out.
So one of the things that you said, Damian, that I think is really interesting is that, you know, in 1.2, you ended up with some maybe additions to features, but maybe not new features, but additions to features that weren't originally planned. Can you give me an example of what that might have looked like?
Well, a good example is the guild banks, where we started with a fairly cut and dry implementation of guild banks going into the system. And when we looked at it, for example, we looked at it and realized, hey, you know what? Logging all of the cache events as separate log entries just really sucks for a lot of reasons. It pushes out all of the events of somebody looting your guild bank because we can only store so many messages. It's also impossible for you to tell how much people are actually contributing because you can't get every possible log message. And so the team took it upon themselves to add the guild ledger, which is a simple idea, but also, you know, one of those small ideas that just makes the whole system so much easier and so much better to use. And it's so much easier for a guild master to observe what's going on inside of the guild and to figure out who the deadbeats are. And so, you know, it's little things like that.
It's a good thing to know. Yeah.
It's little things like that that you see throughout the systems that were implemented in 1.2 where they got a lot of love.
Yeah, I think the one that I got the whole time was so we had a legacy strike team and they were working really hard on that stuff. And they just added a bunch of stuff that basically, if you heard giggling from over there, especially if you heard some very distinctly William Wallace giggling, then, you know, you go over there and you go, hey, what are you going on? They're like, look, rocket boots.
Oh, the rocket boots.
And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing with rocket boots? And they're like, we're going to put in rocket boots. And I'm like, I don't remember anything in the design. And they're like, rocket boots! I'm like, all right.
That was a William Wallace special.
Yeah, the rocket boots.
I would like to personally thank William Wallace then for the rocket boots.
Yeah, rocket. Well, awesome. I'm not sure how, that's the great thing about strike teams. I'm not sure where that originated on that team, but that definitely came out of Will's team, as did the unarmed brawling game, which was another one that I just showed up one day and they said, look what we can do. And I'm like, okay. are we doing that? They're like, yeah, all right, we're going to brawl. And it, once I actually sat down and played with it, I was like, okay, this is pretty fun. And then the role-playing stuff, literally, I'd asked, just go through the whole game and just try to find everything that you can find for emotes that we don't have access to. And yeah, just watching stuff develop there where it's really people's passion going out and saying, hey, this is what I'd like to add to this feature.
Design is most fun when people are building stuff that they like and people aren't building features that they could love and they can put a bit of themselves into. And so we start with design documents that are very high a level and have a charter. But again, you know, really what we want to do is most of our team plays the game, most of our team loves the game, and they have ideas of how to make the game better. And to some extent, me and Daniel, our job is to keep them in between the lines. Be sure they don't go completely off reservation. We've
Rocket
had to slap
boots.
Them down.
Damien and I having very different lines.
Well, you know, I personally liked the Scooby-Doo Mystery Machine speeder bike.
I know. There will be no Scooby-Doo Mystery Machine speeder bike.
So, I mean, obviously 1.2 is out and you know, people are enjoying it at this point. We still have a lot of stuff coming up next. One of the things that we pulled from 1.2 was ranked war zones, and expect those to be coming in soon again. Can you guys talk a little bit about that decision and, you know, what the process is going to be for getting that back into players?
That's pretty easy. I mean, we have very high standards for how good a feature needs to be, and it was clear that this feature in that implementation wasn't good enough to be in a BioWare game, right? And it's important to people because it's how people interact with each other. We wanted to be sure that people weren't doing cheesy things that made other people feel like the system wasn't capturing your rank properly. Mm-hmm. It needed a little more time to cook, and so we pulled the feature and we would do it again. We have a pretty high commitment to making sure that you guys get the best system as possible.
Yeah, and one of the things about PTS, the public test servers, that's incredibly important to understand is we put stuff up there because we want fan feedback. We want the players to get in there and play with it. And they did get to play the ranked war zones, and they looked at the way the stuff worked, especially some of the stuff with the queuing system. And they very subtly, in a very polite way, said, you're dumb. this is dumb. And at that point, deciding that it's more important to have a date, deciding that you're going to put stuff up, tell the community to test it, and then ignore their feedback and push it out anyway, it's just not doing good service. All it lets you do is check a box and say, hey, we have this feature, but it's not something we can be proud of. Yeah. So ranked war zones are coming back, and they're coming back soon, and they're coming back in a design that's been vetted and tested and that we feel really good about.
One of the things about systems like ranked war zones, there is a certain category of systems that are really hard for us to test internally, and we can test the mechanics of how they work. But, you know, we really need to get them in front of a lot of people playing naturally to be able to see whether or not they're actually good, fair, balanced, all that stuff. All of the operations testing, we can sort of test how good an operation is internally, but it's not until people get in with their real characters and whatnot that we get genuine feedback in terms of...
Well, a lot of that playing naturally is playing in ways that there's no way to predict because you've got some crazy idea of what you're going to try to accomplish, right? It's very hard to put a tester in front of something and say, try to really cheat. You know, well, what do you cheat how? I don't know. Be creative and just try to break all of this.
Especially when a system like Ranked War Zones requires dozens or hundreds of people to test, and an operation takes 8 or 16 people in order to do one iteration of a fight. I mean, really, the PTS is there and is where we get most of our valuable qualitative feedback about systems like that. And it's really valuable for us to get people onto that server so we can get that feedback.
Right. Yeah. Our primary job when you're talking about really big systems like that is to make sure that it gets to PTS without bugs.
Yeah.
Right. So it gets in there without big obvious things that are breaking in there, that it's working as designed. But now we actually have to vet the design. One of those things that I know sometimes designers don't like to admit is...
Well, we're full of it about half the time.
I was going to say it's a very iterative process. There is a lot of
the
times
we can see where those lines are drawn right now.
Yeah, that's a nice way of saying it.
There's a lot of times that you've got a great theory, especially if you're trying to do anything new. If you're trying to do anything that is not exactly pulled from somewhere else, then you're just doing guesswork until humans take a look at what you've built and say, ha, you have developed something well, or hmm.
I think if you look at the long view of this project over the entire time we've developed it, I think that there are certainly some things in the background of the history of this project that people would be astonished that we tried to get in, and we looked at it and we said, yeah, that's not going to fly. That's there are a lot of ideas that are good in your head or are good on paper. Then you put it in, it's like, oh, wait, this is too simple. This is too complicated. This is not a right fit for the other systems in the game. it actually happens an awful lot. And one of the things that we try to focus on doing is try to get the systems to a point where we can iterate on as fast as possible.
Speaking of systems that we're going to be able to iterate on, why don't we talk a little bit about 1.3? 1.3 is our next content patch that's coming out. Why don't you guys talk a little bit about what players can expect to see in 1.3?
1.3 is, well, it's the Group Finder patch. That's not the official name. but really, that is our top priority. We have some other features that we're going to go put inside of it. But really, this is all about us getting a group finder to you guys as fast as humanly possible.
Like, I'm super excited about a group finder because that's one of the biggest things that I've run into in lower game is finding groups and actually being able to run those flashpoints that I get. For players who've maybe never used a group finder before, and I know we have plenty of those, what is that actually going to look like in game?
It's fairly simple. And basically what we want to do is to give you a really simple front end that you can use, as well as give you the ability to fine-tune your choices a little more. So the really simple approach is that you open the group finder, you choose what role, tank, heal, or DPS that you're willing to fulfill, and you can choose multiple if your class can fill multiple, and then you choose what kind of content that you want to do, and that content's going to be flashpoints, heroic flashpoints, operations, although story mode operations only for now, and then world content, the planetary content, where you basically can say, I want to quest on Belsavis. Then if you hit to select from there, then it will try to find people who want to do that stuff. Now, if there's a particular dungeon or a particular planet that you want to do, by default, what it does is it puts you in the level appropriate flashpoints for you. If you really want to do the quest in the Mandalorian Raiders flashpoint, for example, you can go and unselect everything else and just say, hey, I just want to sign up for that. And the group finder will try to find other people who are looking for that content as well. So that's a great way for you to target certain quests that you want to accomplish. We felt that was important in our game because of where the game is right now, where people are trying to clear out their quest logs and accomplish certain goals in certain places. However, if you play the random game, especially for flashpoints and heroic flashpoints, and you just set yourself purely random, then yeah, we also throw a cookie at you. We're going to give you, I forget what the itemization guys ended up offering, but you're going to want to try to do a random dungeon a day, I believe. The patch is also mostly going to be a features patch. It's going to have a slightly shorter development time than the last patch, and it's going to be content light, but it's going to have a heavy focus on a couple of key features that we felt were really important to getting to you guys.
You're also getting the next part of Legacy, which we had a little in-game advert going for that beforehand, which are your character perks, which is that's all about the uniqueness of your character, how you want to play each individual character. Hey, you know what? I want to actually get my speeder early. I want to get more XP from PvP. I want to really sort of shape how I'm going to play this guy. I've already played another character. Maybe I want to see different content, but I want to be able to just mostly do that content and still get my character up at the same rate, which brings a lot of exciting stuff. And although Legacy will keep going after that and we'll continue to expand it, those are really the two biggest thematic concepts that then will be there for the players.
And then we have two key itemization features that are coming to you guys that I think will be really good for the in-game players in particular. The first is augment tables. What this is going to allow you to do is to allow you to add an augment slot, which is the slot that crafters get for free whenever they get a critical hit crafting an item. Allow you to use item modification table anywhere in the game to add an augment slot to any piece of wearable gear, armor, and get that augment slot. So that will pretty much allow all of our gear at the end game to be equivalent to each other, which will solve a lot of the itemization problems that we've had in the past. The other thing that personally I'm excited about is adaptive gear. Adaptive gear is the ability for some gear, in particular social gear, to morph its armor rating based on the skill of the wearer. The short form is that, yes, you can now tank in a bikini. I know that's important to some people. It also means that things like the pilot outfit, the sand trooper, the sand person outfit, all those things in particular on the social vendors, as well as the armor on the collector's edition vendors and the security vendors, all of that stuff will be able to be worn at in-game, especially when you combine it with the augment table technology. So
how does one exactly role play a body type for Sith Warrior Juggernaut tanking in explosive content? Does anyone know how that goes?
I think you just explained it. That sounds...
Did you just refer to the bikini as explosive content?
I may have. And I think that's how we explain it.
I think it's self-explanatory.
Yeah.
So basically it seems like you're making the changes towards basically allowing a player to look however they want to accomplish any goal they want to. I mean, if someone wants to tank in a bikini, you know, some people want to tank and look like their Darth Vader fantasy of just being in tons of armor and being able to take a lot of hits. Whereas other people, for some reason, want to tank in a bikini.
Well, a lot of it is about giving people goals, and a lot of those goals tend to be being able to make yourself an individual, being able to do something that's a little above and beyond. So it's never going to be as easy as it is to just go get your end game gear, because you're still going to need your mods. You're still going to have to do that stuff, right? But if you want to take the extra step to say, hey, I'm not just going to be the guy who got this stuff. I'm going to be the guy who is going to go in and show off in the raid, or I'm going to go be the guy who's going to go in and punk you in the war zone wearing this ridiculous outfit. There's definitely a player base that's a great goal to set up for.
I mean, it's always been a goal of the itemization team that the mod system would eventually become the ability for you to preserve and keep whatever appearance you wanted, really. And these two pieces of technology are really the two largest remaining steps that we needed to get to that place. I think there are still a couple more things they want to do, but I think with this piece of technology, they're pretty much almost there.
So if you're that guy who has an entire bank bay filled with orange gear like me, this 1.3 is made for you.
Correct.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, do you guys have anything else to add before we wrap it up?
Not yet. I mean, 1.4 is shaping up to be quite an impressive patch as well. I can't wait to talk about it, but that's not this particular podcast. So,
no, I would say that had a ton of fun playing with all of you as Rakghouls, and can't wait for more of that.
That was a really, really awesome event for sure. Damien, Daniel, thanks for joining us on today's podcast.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk with David Bass about Star Wars The Old Republic's presence at PAX East. And we are back and joined by Senior Tauntaun Manager David Bass. I'm kidding. That's a title he wanted. So, David, introduce yourself.
We had a junior Tauntaun manager, but unfortunately, we ran into some complications on Hoth.
So, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what you actually do?
I'm one of the senior community coordinators here. Mostly, I focus on what we call external community. So, fan sites, guilds, any websites that really cover our stuff is mostly where you'll find me, typically. And I also run a lot of the events that we do around the world each year.
And that is a perfect transition as to why you are here today. Tell us a little bit about what we brought to PAX East this year.
PAX East was actually a lot of fun. This was our first show post-launch. What was our last show? New York Comic Con last year, right? So it's been a long time since we did a show. This was our first convention since we launched. And there's a big, big difference between a launch event at a convention versus a pre-launch event. I think you both were at PAX East last year before you worked for us, right?
That's correct.
PAX East last year was absolute nuts. Insane.
That was what, 9 hour that lines was, to play the game?
Yeah, 8 hour year. Lines within the first 30 seconds of the show.
Exactly.
Opening.
Yeah, it was crazy.
We were showing off Terrell 5, so we had like a nice, long 40 minute demo with a tutorial before that and everything. Big, big, epic experience. Lots of people excited. And now that the game's launched, it calms down a little bit more. We still get a lot of foot traffic at the booth. We still get a ton of people coming, but now these guys are actually players. They're not people who are like, oh man, I'm so excited. I can't wait till this game comes out. It's like, oh man, the game's out. I'm having a great time. Here, I got tons of questions. I got like a lot of things to say about the game. I want to come and hang out. So the booth kind of shifted this year from more of like a presentation crazy, like, oh man, we're awesome, epic thing, to like, hey, let's have a community style booth. Let's have everyone come hang out. Let's have everyone just chill out with us. We basically had a part of the booth that was showing off game update 1.2 because it was about a week before the update came out, so people could just walk up and play. But the other half of the booth we called the community lounge, which was basically a bunch of chairs and sofas where anyone could just come and hang out, plop down, drop their stuff, sit and talk. And then we had a lot of the developers just hanging out there the whole weekend. So at any one point, you could just come on the booth and Damien Schubert would be sitting there and you could just go talk to him. Or Cameron, one of our combat designers, people would just approach him and be like, yo, why you nerfed my class? And then he would be happy to explain to them exactly why he nerfed their class. Or why, in fact, that nerf was actually a buff.
Right. And so one of the big appeals, of course, Senior Tauntaun Manager this year, was our Tauntaun pet that we were giving out at the booth. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the Tauntaun and if they'll be able to get it anywhere else this year.
The Tauntaun is an event-exclusive item. It's a special baby Tauntaun. There's a couple other baby Tauntauns in the game right now that you can get through a variety of different methods, but he's a little black and white speckled Tauntaun.
Who is adorable.
He is adorable.
And we gave out a bunch of codes at PAX for anyone who stopped by the booth to grab one, but we'll also have that Tauntaun with us at all the other events this year, so you can just any show anywhere, check our events page.
I mean, speaking of events, go to the website. But obviously, David, I'm sure you know exactly where we're going to be this year. What is coming up next in terms of big events for Star Wars?
We announced a couple events for the year so far. I don't know if that's all of them for the year, but we will be at E3 in June. We'll have more details on that when the time comes. After that, our next public show is going to be San Diego Comic-Con, which is in San Diego, if you weren't aware. But we'll be there like we were last year. And then after that is Gamescom, which is in Cologne, Germany. And then after that is Star Wars Celebration, which I am so excited about.
Star Wars Celebration is going to be awesome this year.
I've never been. Most of us haven't been, I don't think. It's a convention that happens once every 2 years, and it's just all things Star Wars. It's an actual Lucasfilm convention. And just Star Wars fans from around the world come together in Orlando to just hang out and talk about their love of Star Wars for a couple days. So we're really excited, and we're planning to do some really cool stuff there.
I'm actually looking at a board of ideas right now. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I forgot to erase that. Yeah, but we got a lot of cool ideas in mind for things we want to do at Celebration. I know they still have tickets left, so if anyone wants to go, you should definitely drop by the Celebration website and pick up some tickets, because we're going to be doing some really fun stuff there.
Sure. And I know a lot of people had questions about the Ton Fawn post PAX East, about if there was any other ways to get it. And now you know, just stop by any of our shows. We'll be all over the country in various places, and make sure to stop by the booth and we'll happily hand you your very own Ton Fawn.
Yeah, we got codes, and just find a BioWare employee and we'll have codes for you.
Now, I heard a rumor at PAX East that there was some kind of dance contest that occurred.
Okay, that was true. Well, we... Once you kind of run on a very little sleep after a couple days, you start trying to entertain yourselves by making people do silly things for rewards. I think Allison Bridge, was it the first day or the second day?
Every day, actually. Every day. Yep,
yeah.
Every
she day. Just decided we were going to do a baby Tauntaun dance-off party. So we scheduled it a couple times a day, and we had people get up on stage and show us their best Tauntaun dance. And then we gave them prizes based on who won each time. And it was amazing.
I think that should be a tradition this year.
By far the best was, I think there was a 7-year-old. I think his name was Zach, if I remember. But there was like a 7-year-old that did it on the last day. And he just tore it up. The whole crowd just went crazy.
And as soon as the 7-year-old walks up on stage, you're like, well, I know who's going to win this one.
Right.
Yep. But right. He just went all out crazy with the Tauntaun dance.
So moral of the story, if you're planning on coming to an event for us this year, make sure to practice your Tauntaun dance ahead
of
time.
Don't be surprised if we make you do things for right, a yep. code, yes.
Yep. All right, David, thank you for joining us. Do you have anything else you would like to add?
We're just really excited to see all the players at all these events this year, so come on out to any of the cities. Like I said, check that events page, and we'll be happy to meet up with you and chat and buy you a drink.
And hand you a Tauntaun.
And hand you a Tauntaun, or three.
All right, thank you, David.
Thank you.
All right, so big thanks to Damian, Daniel, and David for taking time out of their workday to join us. I'm really excited about what's coming up next in the game. And one thing that Daniel mentioned very quickly that we didn't spend a lot of time on was the Rakul event.
Yeah, the Rakul event was just an absolute giant pile of fun. What did you love most? What did you love most about the event?
My favorite thing was just seeing disease spread. And I know that's like really dark and gloomy to say, but it was so cool to just be like in a war zone, be an Alderaan or whatever, and everyone's duking it out in the middle. Someone dies, and then just like the plague explodes everywhere and coats everyone.
Yeah, it was pretty amusing. I loved when I was doing the scavenger hunt quest to work on getting the little red Rakul, and it was just me and three of my friends, and I'm on a PvP server, and it was amusing just seeing four level 50s roaming around on Tatooine, and all of a sudden we'd come across a level 20, and I'm like, ah, their name's in red, I have to hit them. But it was just, I really, really enjoyed the world PvP that kind of just spawned from the event. And I spent a lot of time on Tatooine during the event. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, who doesn't love a little crimson rackling? Like, that's the most adorable thing.
It's strangely adorable. I mean, you wouldn't think that a little tiny rackle would be a cute pet, but man, that thing is cute.
You would think so, and completely unique. So yeah, I think that's going to be it for episode one. And I really enjoyed this first episode. If you missed our pilot episode, you can go back and listen to that. We talked to Cameron and Austin from the combat team about combat things, naturally. Yep. Musco, why don't you tell everyone how they can get the show?
All right, so as you probably know, you're listening to the show right now on StarWarsTheOldRepublic.com, so you can listen to it there. Just like our pilot episode, we will have this available on YouTube as well, so make sure you subscribe to our channel. Unfortunately, it's taking a little bit longer than we expected, so we don't have the RSS available yet for this episode, so you won't be able to get it on iTunes quite yet, but we hope to have that very, very soon, along with our own podcast page right here on StarWarsTheOldRepublic.com. So make sure, as always, to stay tuned to the website for updates. And as always, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can find us through all of those, and we'll give you announcements there. When our next podcast is available as well.
Yeah, yeah. And feel free to give us feedback. You know, I really enjoyed reading through the thread last time, and you know, obviously the biggest thing was RSS feed for the show, and it's coming. But until next time.
Yep, and fun fact for the episode, Bruce. Oh, yeah? Everyone who is on this show, aside from you and I, their name starts with D.
Wow, how about that?
I feel like next episode we should get Dallas Dickinson on here or something else just to continue that trend.
Yes, all the D's.
Or maybe we should move to E next time so we continue along in the alphabet, and then I'll win.
You'll win.
Yeah, we skipped B, unfortunately.
Yeah, we're screwed there.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us.
May the force be with you.